Everybody, Jake and Gino here, and today we have a very important question. Gino, you ready?
I was born ready, my friend. Hit me.
Do you have the financial vocabulary to succeed in multifamily real estate?
Well, if you don't, good luck finding deals and good luck finding partners, my friend.
Hey, but you're in luck. You have Jake and Gino here to take care of you today. Today, we are going to cover the 7 key terms you need to qualify yourself as an investing pro in multifamily real estate. G-Dad, hit them.
Wow. Number one, NOI. I don't know what the heck that stands for, right? When you first hear it, it's net operating income. It's one of the most important terms in multifamily real estate. You're looking at a T12. You're looking for that NOI, net operating income. You take the income of the property, the net income after vacancy, after all your other income, that net income number, you subtract all your operating expenses, expenses needed to operate the property. That's your net operating income. You are looking at that number and trying to increase that number when you're taking over a property.
It's all about the Benjamins.
Yes, my friend. What's the next one?
Next one is cash on cash return. That's what it's all about for me. Look, this is why I got into investing. This is why I stay in investing. Cash on cash return, that is the money that you're making on your dollars invested. As we like to say here at Jake and Gino, if it don't cash flow, let the grass grow.
This number can be a little deceiving because if you use creative cash and you don't put any cash in, your cash on cash is skyrocketed, right, baby? And what about if you refi and roll like we've done over 11 million bucks? Well, you have no more cash in a deal. So your cash on cash is infinite, right, Jake?
Hey, but that's what we call nirvana, Gino.
You're looking at cash on cash. Let's say you put 10 grand into a deal, right? You have 10 grand coming out of the deal, net cash, but you have $100,000 of cash invested in the deal. It's $10,000 coming to you every year at $100,000 you put into the deal. It's a 10% cash on cash return. When we were buying, Jake, that number was around 10%. That's what we wanted. We were looking for that. Now the deals have gotten a lot skinnier. So when you underwrite to your pro forma, figure out what your cash on cash number is. And the thing is, that's not the only metric you're looking at. That's one of the metrics you're looking at when you're investing, because there's so many other benefits to multifamily, scalability, tax benefits. That cash on cash is just one of those quick numbers where you can look at and go, this is what I'm looking for. Am I there? If not, where do I need to go?
Absolutely.
Next one, the infamous cap rate. Now this, we could spend hours and hours doing this. I had to write this down. This is the Investopedia. So all the haters out there about cap rates, this is from Investopedia, okay? Not from Jake and Gino. It's the rate of return that is expected to be generated on real estate investment property. Okay, I didn't make that up.
Can people are going to say NOI divided by value. Is that fair enough?
Okay, do that. NOI divided by price. But it's important because the cap rate doesn't take into a lot of things. It doesn't take into future cash flows, the time value of money. It doesn't take into adding debt onto a property, right? What we're trying to do is compare apples to apples. So if you go into Nashville and you're looking at a property and it's a 5 cap and you find a property that's off market, that's a 6 cap. Well, you can say to yourself, that looks like it's a great deal. That's one of the ways you use cap rates. For us, you know, we're looking at deals, cap rates. I don't want to get too involved in this, but think of cap rates as a level of risk. The lower the cap rate, the less risk there is, usually, right? Because New York and California have had traditionally low cap rates and they're still low. So take that with a grain of salt. Cap rates, let's say you have a 10 cap within 10 years at a 10% cap rate, you'll get all of your money back. That's another way to use cap rates. But once again, let me just finish this off by saying the rate of return that is expected to be generated on real estate. Net operating income, that very first one, divided by the value of the purchase price. That's
Gino,
what cap rate is.
Gino, let's be real. Cap rates are the politics of real estate investing. Everyone's got an opinion and no one can agree on it, right? We'll just keep it simple, right?
Dude, say that again, because that is totally, because I have people killing me on different thing forums saying you don't know what a cap rate is. Say that again. That's really important.
I said is the cap rate is the politics of real estate investing. Everyone's got an opinion and nobody seems to agree on them. So just take that for what it is. All right.
I love that, dude. Next one, DSCR, debt service coverage ratio. That's your net operating income divided by the debt service, all the debt on the property. So very simple. If your NOI is $100,000 and your debt service, your mortgage payments are $100,000, that means it's a 1.0 debt service coverage ratio. Not very good, because you're just making enough money to pay the bills. We don't want that. Banks traditionally want at least a 1.2, which means you're making 20% more income than what the debt service is. 1.4 is even greater, right? It really comes down to it. This is a key indicator. Back in the last recession, I don't know if people remember it, banks were getting very risky. They were dropping their DSCR. They were going from 1.2 to 1.1 to close to one. And that's when you know there is a lot of what we say frothiness in the market, a lot of people taking on risk. So take a look at that number. Community banks traditionally want at least a 1.2. I mean, some banks want 1.3, 1.4. See where you're comfortable on. And obviously, if you're doing a heavy value added lift, that DSCR is going to be less because there's not going to be enough income covering the debt service of the property.
Yeah, important metric, but also very important because the banks rely on this heavily. And so it needs to be a component of your parameters when you're underwriting deals, because it's going to be a huge component in what your financing looks like.
The next one is price per unit. I love this one because it's just a quick metric for us. Find out what the price per unit is in your market for one bed and a two bed, and find out what the average rents are. So give you an example. One beds, when we started investing a long time ago, they were like $25,000 per unit, right? We knew. So if you see a deal in the market that's trading at $23,000 or $24,000 per unit, well, that looks like a good deal. Let me take a look at it. If you see something trading at $35,000 per unit, when it's $25,000, you're going to say, that's a little expensive. Let me do some more digging. So the price per unit is really cool because you can take a quick value, quick metric, do some math. Right now, one bed's in our market, around $65,000 to $70,000 per unit. We look at what the rents are at $650,000, and that's how we use that as a quick metric. I love it because it's just something really quick to know that we just bought a deal at $40,000 a door. We know it's going to be worth $70,000 a door. I don't have to waste time underwriting. I know it's a great deal.
Yeah. And don't get postured by brokers. They're like, oh, price per unit doesn't matter. Just look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. Guys, you look at everything. And that's, I don't care what they say. I'm not going to get postured up on a broker and not look at what the price per unit is. Okay. I'm always going to be looking at it. I'm also going to be looking at the numbers. I'm going to be looking at the NOI. It's just another metric. I want to know. It's a inflection point in the game, and I'm going to be looking at it. So I don't care. I'm getting a little broker posture lately on this. And I'm like,
Stenzi, I
love that.
Know.
I just want to know. Okay. What is it? Well, but Jake, I'm not, you know, it's like, they don't want to say, cause it's like, they're like, well, it doesn't matter. Okay. Well, can you not tell me? Like, I'm just asking a question. We're just having a conversation here. You know, you don't got to get off your heels. All right. So,
yep. The next one, building type. So what does building type mean? You have A properties, B properties, C properties, and D properties. D properties are in war zones. Think of a dog, right? Think of like those are really heavy lifts, really tough areas, usually low median income properties that aren't going to come back if you put a lot of time to love and care into them. Now, obviously, cap rates that we've spoken are going to be really high in these markets because there's a lot more risk and they're going to be cheaper. Cap rate has got it, prices go lower, cap rates go higher. So in the D properties, if that is your area where you want to start buying deals, fine. But just know that they're a lot harder to manage those
more
kinds of properties.
There.
Definitely.
Yeah.
C properties tend to be 30 years and older. They tend to have a lot more deferred maintenance. They cash flow a lot more. That's where Jake and I have been playing for the last 10 to 15 years. Now, as we get into this type of the market cycle, they tend to be more expensive. They're what we call right now value adds. 10 years ago, they were called distressed. Now, as the marketing gurus come out there, they're value-add properties. But C properties tend to cash flow more, but they need a lot more tender love and care in them. The B properties tend to be between 10 and 15 to 20 years older. They're a little bit newer. They have a mix of blue-collar and white-collar residents in them. They tend to cash flow a little bit less. Cap rates are lower. There's less deferred maintenance on them. We're tending to buy these properties right now in this part of the market cycle because there's less what we call CapEx. There's less requirements. There's less stuff to fix as far as roofs and as far as driveways. The A properties are the newer properties. They're the ones you see out there that are popping up everywhere. The beautiful amenities. You have cafes. You have dog washing stations. You have these beautiful pools, saunas, coffee shops. Those are the properties that are being built right now. A lot of real estate investment trusts and a lot of private equity love these properties because it's a great way to park cash. Cap rates are lower because there's less risk in these properties, a lot easier to manage, and it's just a great way to preserve wealth. A properties preserve wealth. B, C properties, you tend to grow your wealth there. The key is to buy the B's and C's, grow the wealth, and then ultimately roll them up into the A's. That's what the ultimate goal is, Jake.
The interesting thing is that the value add, many of these have already had the value added, and yes, now they're called the light value add. So just always be aware of the light value add and make mm-hmm. sure there is the value to add.
So the last one is LTV. It's loan to value. When we started buying properties, it was normally an 80% loan to value. You take the debt on the property and the total value of the property. So if you have an $80,000 mortgage and the property is worth $100,000, it's $80,000 divided by $100,000, which gives it an 80% loan to value. The lower loan to value, the less risk the bank likes it. So if you have a 50% loan to value, that means you have more skin in the game. The only problem is the lower loan to value, the lower your returns are, your cash on cash returns are going to be. So you have to balance it out. What is your investing strategy? So loan to value is a great metric. Jake can talk about loan to cost as well. But before we get into that, go back and listen to these seven metrics that we've talked about, because you're not going to analyze a deal by just using one. You're not going to say, I'm going to look at the cap rate, or I'm going to look at the price per unit, or I'm going to look at DSCR, right? Or I'm going to look at the building type, or the loan to value, or the NOI. You're going to take all seven of these, create what your buy right criteria is. Remember, buy right, manage right, finance right. Well, in the buy right criteria, you need to have parameters. Real quick, Jake and Gino, 5 to 6 caps, 50 units plus. We want at least a 10% cash on cash once we've done pro forma, right? These are the metrics that we're looking for. 80s build and above, B2C properties, right? You're going to use all of these metrics to start analyzing and really focusing on what you want. Because if you can't focus on it, if you're not clear on it, you're not going to be motivated to do it. That's why it's important to learn all of these metrics, to learn all of them, and to create your own personal buy right criteria.
It's interesting what you see from the agencies right now, because they essentially want zero risk. So they're making you put up 12 months of principal and interest. And then in some of these deals, they're like, well, how about 65% loan to value? And it's like, should I just buy the whole thing cash? And then would you feel better about that? Right. Like, yes. You know, it's just, it's funny, but they really want the return, and they want very, if at all, any risk. So they're trying to hit and whatever, good for them. If they can get it, they're doing their thing. But the loan to cost is a very interesting one. And this is typically like a bridge type product. You can get it from your community banks. We love getting loan to cost from our community banks. Essentially, Gino said you got a C-type product, 1975 asset. You know, maybe it's a 50 unit and you need to put $200,000 in it to fix it up. Well, instead of raising that $200,000 or coming out of pocket for it, you can essentially finance that through the bank. So you'll put 20% down, and that's inclusive of the purchase price plus the renovations. Mm-hmm. So you're basically putting in 20% of your renovation cost. Okay. You're going in, getting that baby fixed up, and then you can refi it once you've added the value and basically take the money out at that point and be in a really good spot. So we've executed loan to cost. I think it's a phenomenal strategy. If you need to add any significant CapEx or renovations to a building, wonderful, wonderful strategy for that. And again, you know, for us, we're looking to, whether it's you know, a big turnaround play or it's cash on cash from day one, ultimately, we're looking for that cash flow. We want that cash on cash return, because that's what, to us and our goals, mm-hmm. sound multifamily investing looks like.
If it don't cash flow, let the grass grow. And I have one more thing to say. Debt, Jake has been focusing on it, and I've been focusing on this video, is the circulatory engine of the economy. Mm. As you see loan to value drop, debt is seeing into the future and going, I see a lot of risk. I don't want to take as much risk. I got principal and interest reserves, and I want lower loan to value. So take that with a grain of salt. Now, if you want to learn more on how to create your buy right criteria, go to jakeandgino.com/apply. Apply to work with our team. They will help you set up that buy right criteria, because it's all about buy right, manage right, and finance right. The three-legged framework of nailing multifamily.
Boom. That's it, man. Gino, you the man.
Mr. Stenzi, take care, everyone. Thanks.
See you guys.